then chief of staff, replacing Andy Card. And Bolton apparently is considering other changes. Bush says he's given him wide latitude to strengthen the White House. Bush saying Bolton will offer advice on who should be here and who should not be here. Bush says he hears all this speculation about whose job might be on the line. He says people love following what he called the game of musical chairs. The judge says the U.S. Army general who first recommended using dog teams at Abu Ghraib can testify in the court-martial of a prison dog handler. The defense will not be allowed to call Rumsfeld, but defense lawyers say Marine Major General Jeffrey Miller can testify about interrogations that led to prisoner abuse and to a guilty verdict from another dog handler a month ago. Sergeant Santos Cardona worked with Sergeant Michael Smith, and he also faces charges of using his animal to terrorize detainees. Their commander served both at Abu Ghraib and Guantanamo. No agreement on how to deal with Iran's nuclear program, a top U.S. diplomat saying envoys from the five permanent Security Council members and Germany discussed sanctions at a meeting in Moscow today, but could not agree over the next step. Undersecretary of State Nicholas Burns saying the diplomats recognize the need for a stiff response to Iran. More talks are needed, he says. He says that Iran's announcement that it is successfully enriching uranium was a step backward that provoked deep concern. Stocks closed sharply higher today, getting a lift apparently from indications that the two-year string of interest rate hikes may be nearing an end. This is Air America Radio News.
hear the voices, and I read the front page, but I'm the decider, and I decide what is best, and what's best is for Don Rumsfeld to remain as the Secretary of Defense.
Oh, God. Good evening, Truth Seekers. Malloy here on Air America Radio. Welcome to tonight's program. Well, let's see. Bush is the decider. Condoleezza Rice is the unsticker. What does that make Cheney in this macabre menagerie? The drunken shooter? It's getting curiouser and curiouser, isn't it? I've never had the weird experience of watching in full view a public figure, much less a politician, go mad. But that's what he's doing. A complete, absolute breakdown. We're going to cover that tonight. Bush invented another new special word today during Rumfest 2006, which continues in the media. You know, that's the latest bright, shiny new object. Rove has dangled in front of the video cameras and bland, blonde commentator clones to keep our attention diverted from the coming nuclear strike against Iran. The decider. I'm the decider. We have some clips to share with you tonight. Some from Rush, Death by Temptation, Limbaugh, the oxymoron. This is from yesterday. Rumsfeld called into Limbaugh's program, and Rush just got all wet with joy. Or maybe it was the Vicodin. I don't know. It's just, this is insane. I mean, isn't it? Is it insane, or? Oh, my God. I wrote in our little blog at airamericaradio.com/Mike Malloy. This is the second time I'm aware of that Bush has used the term, I hear the voices, or reference to voices. And as I wrote, the last time he admitted the existence of the voices, actually it was the voice, capital letters, it was to Abu Mazen, who was the Palestinian prime minister then, and Nabil Sha'at, his foreign minister. This is back in June of 2003. And in describing the conversation that eventually wound up, I believe, in Haaretz, the Israeli newspaper, Nabil Sha'at said, quote, President Bush said to all of us, I'm driven with a mission from God. God would tell me, George, go and fight those terrorists in Afghanistan. And I did. And then God would tell me, George, go and end the tyranny in Iraq. And I did. And now again, I feel God's words coming to me. Go get the Palestinians their state and get the Israelis their security and get peace in the Middle East. And by God, I'm going to do it. You know, and like I wrote, if you or I made these kind of comments at work or at home or out hanging out with our friends or getting a beer, or if you sat down to your shrink and said this kind of stuff, that would require, wouldn't it, immediate hospitalization, immediate sedation? Christ Almighty, this guy is, I mean, this is crazy. Crazy, 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 crazy. I watched, what's his name on CNN at 6 o'clock, Lou Dobbs. I keep thinking Limbaugh, Lou Dobbs. And of course, our gal Randy was there with a couple of other interesting people. And Randy forced the conversation over to what's going to happen on June 2nd in Nevada. And we're going to talk about that a little bit tonight. A couple of quick emails. Jesus, I'm freaked out. I've got the worst case of the creepy crawlies that I have had in ever. Ever. I think to feel worse than this, I'd have to reach into, you know, personal family tragedies, like my mother's death or my sister's death or my brother's death or something like that, to find the same kind of pre-floating anxiety that's just around me like a cloud tonight. And it just continues, doesn't it? I mean, it's just every single day. Got an email from Alex. Hey, Mike, this Friday, Bush is visiting my hometown, St. Helena. Is that Montana? No, St. Helena. He doesn't have the state here, but it doesn't matter. This Friday, Bush is visiting my hometown, St. Helena. It's a small tourist town. Wine is its biggest industry. A group of people have organized themselves and are going to protest against his presence in our town. I would appreciate if you could tell your listeners to check out this website, unwelcomebush.com. Unwelcomebush.com. It contains information on the protest. Thank you. P.S. If you read this over the air, please don't share my last name. I wouldn't. I try never to do that anyway. Has your site crashed yet? Unwelcomebush.com. And the other night we were talking about giggling killers and about how Rumsfeld, not so long ago, this whore press that we have in this country, we're commenting on his sexiness. His rock star-ness, his swagger, the fact that women wanted to be around him and touch him. So Debbie wrote this in. Don't forget my other favorite, Henry Kissinger. He was a blank-blank playboy. He dated Jill St. John, among many others, and he's the daddy of war criminals. He's responsible for the illegal bombing of Cambodia, killing literally millions, and the horrific genocide in East Timor, and women wanted to blank him. I just watched the film The Trials of Henry K. last weekend, so he's still fresh in my brain. I actually couldn't sleep after seeing that movie. What a horribly sick bastard. And he's free as a bird, tra-la, tra-la, billionaire business owner. Life is wonderful. I'm so sick of these monsters, Mike. Debbie in Virginia Beach. Yeah. Kate sent an email, and she references Edvard Munch. Everybody's familiar with that famous painting, The Scream. Dear Mike, the above Edvard Munch would be an excellent representation of my mental state. You realize, don't you, Mike, that if we do this, attack Iran with nukes, all bets are off. We become fair game. The only nation to use nukes in war once. Twice? Do you think the rest of the world would give us a third chance? Fool me once. Whether you believe or not, pray for us. My mama is dying or I would be in D.C. today. I think I begin to understand a little of the frustration of oh so many of the people our empire has crushed. There is no bottom. Hate is not strong enough to describe this. Sorrow is not empty enough to encompass this. If I begin to scream, I may never stop. Take care. Watch your back. Kate. And then Paula. All women emails. I guess I read Paula's when we come back. It's very quick, too. It's strange. I don't have the urge to be a smartass tonight. Well, at least not a loud smartass. They're just a creepy. Do you sense it? Just a very creeped out kind of sense about everything. Everything kind of sticky, like spider webs, or you know, cold and sticky. Jesus. Watching every man, women, and all their own included on the list. The Luminous Power.
disagree. That's when the madman flicks a switch. And the clear will go for me.
You're listening to The Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
Every generation has a story to tell. For those who lived through the war in Iraq, it's The Last True Story I'll Ever Tell by John Crawford. The New York Times bestselling account of a man who opposed the war but fought on the front lines. The Last True Story I'll Ever Tell is the first on-the-ground memoir to make an impact, raves the Times Book Review. John Stewart of The Daily Show says it's a wonderful read. Time Magazine calls it harrowing and exquisite. Read The Last True Story I'll Ever Tell, now a Riverhead paperback.
The following is a message from Brutus at the National Disaster Search Dog Foundation.
Last October, three buildings collapsed. I was called in to help. Two little kids were missing. I looked everywhere. Then I found them. They were crying. We all were.
Be part of the search. Call 1-888-4K9-HERO or visit searchdogfoundation.org. Made possible by Search Dog USA.
Flying monkey right blues, here's the cure, Mike Malloy.
Yeah, let's just be happy.
Oh, yeah,
It's 21 past the hour. The first time, just a little personal story here, the first time I ever bought a serious handgun was in 1962. Well, I guess first time I bought a gun of any sort. I had gone hunting before, but I always used a cousin's 30-30 or shotgun or whatever, or an uncle's, or, you know. But it was 62 during the Cuban Missile Crisis. Was that 62? Yeah, I think it was. And the nuclear chess game was occurring between Khrushchev and Kennedy. And the Soviet boats were on the way to Cuba. And those boats contained, so we were told, nuclear-tipped missiles that were going to be placed on the launching pads that had been built in Cuba by Soviet technicians and construction engineers. And, of course, that's when Kennedy ordered the Navy to blockade Cuba, and if the Soviet boats tried to cross, to blow them out of the water. And in response to that, Khrushchev put his nation's nuclear forces on alert. In response to that, Kennedy did the same, and there we stood. And I was, excuse me, very young then, not so young that I couldn't go buy a gun. And my fear was that there was going to be a nuclear exchange. I believe that. I was brought up in that generation. I had gone through years and years and years of duck and cover, and the adults and the preachers and the teachers and everybody telling me that, you know, the about the Cold War and the bomb shelters and the arms race and nuclear death and, but maybe you could survive a nuclear exchange, but then the ensuing chaos and breakdown of civilization would be nearly as bad as the nuclear exchange. Some wag said the lucky ones will be the ones who die when the bombs fall. So I was very young and very married at the time and had a baby. And all I could think of, I was living outside Toledo, Ohio, living in the suburbs, the way out suburbs, out in the country. And I could see the hordes of crazed people roiling out from Toledo. This is back when Toledo, Ohio, was still a viable city and not the empty hole that it is now. And I could see the hordes of crazed, fear-struck people with running nuclear sores all over their bodies, screaming out of Toledo, looking for food and shelter and water and. And this was the fantasy. So I thought, oh, Jesus, you know, I'm not going to have to defend myself against 7-foot-tall Russian soldiers. I'm going to have to defend myself and my wife and my little baby against fellow Americans. So I went and bought a 38-caliber Spanish revolver. And I told some of my friends about it, and they just laughed and laughed and laughed. You have a pistol? And there's going to be a nuclear war? That was real creepy, and that seems like 1,000 years ago. In fact, it was 1,000 years ago. But I was thinking, you know, over the past couple of days, kind of the same, that same empty, howling, cold, sticky feeling that I felt 40 years ago. Only this time, the instigator is an American, choke on the word, president. Paula writes, Dear Mike, you're reading of the article stating that 1 million people would be killed if we nuke Iran. Remind me of a story, I don't know who wrote it, about crusaders going off to sea to rid the world of pagans, or whatever they had to rid the world of so they could loot and rape the land and then claim it for Christ. There were hundreds of crusaders on ships, and as they came to shore, they saw thousands of evildoers standing on the bank, waving and shouting. Being good Christian soldiers, they docked, went to shore, and slew every single human being that had gathered there. Later, they found out that the people who gathered there were the only Christians in the land, and they had received word that Christians, other Christians were coming and wanted to welcome them to their home. Not one Christian of the new land was left alive. Spoils of war, the good fight. I guess it's important, Paula writes, for the Bushites to go kill all the people of the land before asking a friend or foe, because to them, as to the seafaring Christian crusaders, they are killing to get whatever bounty is out there that they want, and then claim it for Christ. Don't you know Jesus appreciates that? Happy Easter, Paula.
This sweet face, but I'll tell you, my place is of the sun, and this place is of the dark. I do not feel the moment, I do not catch a spark. My rifle takes my side. Of darkness any longer.
This is the Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
Before I almost died from a staph infection, I came close to losing my leg. Before I came close to losing my leg, I started living on the streets. Before I started living on the streets, I thought everyone wanted to kill me. Before I thought everyone wanted to kill me, I quit eating. Before I quit eating, I never felt so good. Before I never felt so good, I tried meth. End meth at drugfree.org/Michael. A message from the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
Time furnished by the Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Ooh, are you okay?
Oh, it's my arthritis pain.
Here, try my Aleve.
People with arthritis are sharing their good news about Aleve. Just two Aleve have the strength to stop arthritis pain all day. That would take 8 extra strength Tylenol. So try Aleve and see for yourself. Then share your good news. Comparison based on 24-hour label dosing. Use as directed for minor arthritis pain.
May is Arthritis Month. Join Aleve and the Arthritis Foundation for the annual Arthritis Walk taking place nationwide. For more information, visit AleveGoodNews.com.
Whether you have health insurance or not, chances are you don't have dental or vision coverage. But now, with the Optimum Health Discount Card, you and your family can get substantial savings of up to 60% off every time you visit your dentist or eye care professional. Because this is not insurance, everyone is accepted, even if you or your family members have pre-existing conditions. For only $9.95 a month, you, your spouse, and your children are all covered. Your membership includes access to our combined nationwide network of over 75,000 participating dentists and eye care professionals. Call right now and we'll also include for free the RX Saver discount prescription card. The RX Saver is accepted in most pharmacies nationwide and provides savings of up to 60% off most medications. Call our toll-free number now at 1-866-333-3000. That's 1-866-333-3000. Use the Optimum Health discount card risk-free for 30 days and start saving now on all of your dental and vision care needs. Call 1-866-333-3000. Again, 1-866-333-3000.
national security advisor to help unstick things that may get stuck. Best way to put it is an unsticker.
And he's a decider. 26 before the hour. Busy day in D.C. today, Truth Seekers. Boltons and Rummies and Nukes. Oh, my. So much ground to cover. The good news is we don't have any quacking from Simple Scotty today, as all he did at the press briefing was parrot what Mensa Man and Rummy said in their live appearances anyway. Bad news is we have some quotes from Limbaugh's program from his interview with Rummy yesterday. You got to hear this. I'll play the part of Limbaugh. I'm not going to put that pig on my program, but you'll hear the response from Rumsfeld. Talk about giving somebody a monica. Woo! But first, this bit from this morning's White House media circus. President Bush nominates Rob Portman as OMB director and Susan Schwab for U.S. Trade Representative. Is that the wife of the Schwab guy that the broker?
The one that everyone listens to?
Yeah, right.
Like, I know.
Okay. Now, they had some Q&A following his nomination of Portman and Schwab. Before we get to the general insanity of Rumsfest 2006, Bush took a couple of questions on non-Rummy issues like nukes and Bolton's planned changes to the White House staff. Reporter says, sir, when you talk about Iran and you talk about how you have diplomatic efforts, you also say all options are on the table. Does that include the possibility of a nuclear strike? Is that something that your administration will plan for?
All options are on the table. We want to solve this issue diplomatically, and we're working hard to do so. The best way to do so is therefore to be a united effort with countries who recognize the danger of Iran having a nuclear weapon.
Makes you wonder if this recent Rummy dust-up is nothing more than another diversion to take our minds off the fact that Raisin Brain is seriously thinking about using nukes unprovoked on a Muslim nation, which there's no question here. That is the beginning of World War III, or at least it is the most obvious beginning. You can argue that World War III has already started. All options are on the table, he says. Those are the words of a madman, of an insane man. You know how the Iranians have responded? They have notified the world through websites and speeches that in response to the nuclear threats, the Iranians have put together a cadre of tens of thousands of people. They paraded them through Tehran a few days ago, who are going to commit ritual suicide against the Americans and the Brits. Not ritual suicide, but military suicide. In other words, the response of the Iranians, this big nuclear threat to the United States, is to tell a bunch of people to strap up, it's time to go. Suicide bombers. What are they going to do? Put them in airplanes and fly over D.C. and drop these guys from the sky? This is the big nuclear threat from Iran. Suicide bombers. All options are on the table. We want to solve this issue diplomatically. We were hard to do so, you know, like we did in Iraq. Morning, Mr. President. Do you expect that there will be some changes in your staff that were not voluntary? Today you've highlighted openings in your administration, but will Mr. Bolton ask some people to leave? Hint, hint. And would you accept his counsel for cabinet changes? Excuse me, sir. For cabinet changes as well as White House staffers?
I understand this is this is a matter of high speculation here in Washington. It's the game of musical chairs, I guess you'd say, that people love to follow. My instructions to Josh Bolton was that I expect him to design the White House structure so that it will function, so that he can do his job, function in a way so he's more likely to be able to do his job. And, of course, he will bring different recommendations to me as to who should be here and who should not be here.
It's a game of musical chairs. He loves the kitty game analogies. Doesn't he remember when he accused Saddam of playing hide-and-seek and charades? The media wants to play musical chairs. You know, personally, I want to play pin the indictment on the jackass. That's what I want to play. George, I want to play pin the indictment on the moron. God. Now for the Rumsfeld portion of tonight's very interesting sound clips. Honestly, Bush can't fire Rummy. I'm not kidding. He can't live without him. There is a strange relationship between these two. Think about it. Rumsfeld twice, according to Rumsfeld himself, offered the moron his resignation, and the moron wouldn't take it, even after the atrocities of Abu Ghraib were revealed. So now it's crazy time at today's Q&A on the lawn. This is the last one from Chucklenuts. Listen to this back and forth with the reporter about the voices Bush hears telling him to keep crazy old Rummy on his team because, you know, he's a decider, not a uniter or something. Mr. President, you've made it a practice of not commenting on potential personnel moves.
You've made it a practice of not commenting on potential personnel moves.
Of course I did.
Calling it speculation.
You can understand why. Because we got people's reputations at stake. And on Friday, I stood up and said, I don't appreciate the speculation about Don Rumsfeld. He's doing a fine job. I strongly support him.
Well, what do you say to critics who believe that you're ignoring the advice of retired generals, military commanders, who say that there needs to be a change?
I say I listen to all voices, but mine's the final decision. And Don Rumsfeld is doing a fine job.
Heck of a job.
He's not only transforming the military, he's fighting a war on terror. He's helping us fight a war on terror. I have strong confidence in Don Rumsfeld. I hear the voices, and I read the front page, and I know the speculation, but I'm the decider, and I decide what is best, and what's best is for Don Rumsfeld to remain as the Secretary of Defense.
Because if I fired him, my head will explode. Cannot resist program. I love Big I love Donald. Don Rumsfeld's doing a heck of a job. He's not only transforming the military. Too bad it's not in a good way, chuckle nuts. He's fighting war on terror. He's helping us fight a war on terror. Yeah, war on terror. Okay, quick break here, and we've got a couple more. Jesus. Cold and damp and sticky. Kind of like, I don't know, I remember my grandmother's basement where the coal was. And there were cobwebs and sticky things and no lights and... I don't know. It's kind of what this is like.
The Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio. Do you know the power of financial empowerment? Ambassador Andrew Young, humanitarian and educator, has teamed with Operation Hope founder John Bryant to help eradicate poverty through financial literacy education. Mr. Bryant, how is Operation Hope meeting this challenge?
To empower 5 million youth in 5 years in financial literacy.
Ambassador Young, what's your role in financial literacy education?
Well, I came up with Martin Luther King in the Civil Rights Movement, and now we're trying to develop a Silver Rights Movement. Young people in the system of free enterprise and capitalism need to understand money and how it works. It takes an army of volunteers, business leaders, educators, the entire community. We need the community's help.
If you need financial hope, we're here to help you. Call Operation Hope at 877-592-HOPE. That's 877-592-HOPE. Or visit us online at operationhope.org.
sometimes get encapsulated in a bubble.
Would you bring a voice in the sky?
Okay, Rumsfeld, you know, probably the most outrageous argument that I've heard in support of Rumsfeld's deadly and disgraceful leadership was from these generals who issued their words of support for the for this crazed, dead-eyed killer today. Their argument was that Rumsfeld should stay because it would somehow hurt the troops and lower their morale. If he was removed, that's like saying you got to keep the tumor in your colon because your intestines would become agitated if it were removed. Generals actually arguing that we need to keep bad leadership in place. Leadership that is lethal to our troops. Leadership ordering horrendous forms of torture on innocent Muslims. Leadership ruining our global reputation. Leadership killing thousands. We got to keep the man who said you go to war with the army you have, not the army you wish you had, in response to questions about lack of proper body armor and armored vehicles. This sick son of a bitch is not nearly as sick as the generals who support him. The man who said he opposed a draft because draftees didn't contribute anything to the fight. And I remember the outroar from the Vietnam veterans who heard that. Ah, you filthy pig. So let me get this right. This freak should stay so he can make more bad plans and kill more people for the sake of our troops? That's the consensus among you sick Rumsfeld supporters? I don't give a damn what your rank is. I don't care how long you've been in the military. I don't care how much of a Christian you are or how many oaths you swore to protect the Constitution of the United States. You are a freak and a coward! And you're supporting a man who wants to destroy the country. Damn you! Are you all on drugs? So speaking of drugs, here's some audio from the EIB network yesterday. Rumsfeld phoned into the Pigman's show with predictable results. You could just hear the saliva flying all over the place. And after hearing this, I know why Rush can't hear. He's got his head too far up Rummy's behind. I'll spare you the pain of actually hearing Limbaugh's voice. I'll read his part.
Well, let me ask you, I've got to remind you of something. You probably won't remember the phone call to this program. You were being hailed as a sex symbol in Washington, and I asked you about that. You were clearly embarrassed.
Jesus, I sound like Ed Schultz.
You laughed and so forth, and today is a far different circumstance. It's a great illustration of how things work inside the Beltway, Mr. Secretary. So what does it feel like to you to go through these ups and downs and to have practically the entire media jump on the case of these six generals demanding your ouster?
Well, you know, this too will pass. I think about it, and I must say, there's always two sides to these things, and the sharper the criticism comes, sometimes the sharper the defense comes from people who don't agree with the critics, and I've been very pleased to see General Dick Myers and General Tommy Franks and General Mike DeLong and so many others, Admiral Vern Clark, step up, and people who I've worked very closely with, and they've been terrific. So I'm here at the Pentagon doing my job, working on transformation and seeing that we manage the force in a successful way.
When does the successful part begin? Brain dead man. Working on transformation, what? Are you changing into something?
I'm here at the Pentagon working on transformation. Look, here in the middle of my back, a hand is starting to grow. Look, down here where my knees belong. See the sharp talons? All right, Ms. Secretary of Iraq, your assessment, obviously, with the news that you just gave us, is much better than it's being reported by that sick liberal media, and I assume that you're optimistic about the final outcome. And how would you describe the process and the progress there.
Well, the progress has been good. I mean, we were now up to 250,000 Iraqi security forces, and they're, as I say, taking over more and more bases and real estate all the time.
Ooh.
And we're able to transfer responsibility to them. More and more, the leadership in the Kurdish community, the Sunni community, and now in the Shia community are saying, let's get it done.
Tell me this man is not delusional. He thinks things are going well in Iraq. Mission accomplished. Good? That was good? Bush on the aircraft? Abu Ghraib, good? Civil war, good? What does he say? We're up to 250,000 Iraqi security forces, and they're all invisible, Rush. That's the beauty of it! They're all invisible! Oh, this is going to be great, Rush! This is my new army! I have all these invisible soldiers! Rush! Did you see the third segment of the Lord of the Rings? Remember when the boats pulled up and all those sprites and spooks and dead things and ghosts came off and defeated the forces of evil? By Christ, Rush, that's what I've got. Yeah, they're all invisible, Rush. Yeah! You're such a guy, Rush. You can come down to the Pentagon anytime. Watch me transform. Look at this. See this thing in my back here? Well, Mr. Secretary, you have to be aware of it. Anti-war opinion of those in the country who have it, and you're aware of the people who are trying to foment it and make it larger. Bastards. How do you, as a public servant, square the attitude of the anti-war people? If you think it's a large group of people, with what are your stated goals and what the president's stated goals are? How do you put those two together? And end up formulating a policy of sticking to it.
I think we just have to accept it, that people have a right to say what they want to say, and to have an acceptance of that, and recognize that the terrorists, Zarqawi, those people have media committees. They are actively out there trying to manipulate the press in the United States. They're very good at it. They're much better at managing those kinds of things than we are. And we have to recognize that we're not going to lose any battles out in the global war on terror out in Iraq or Afghanistan. We started chasing public opinion polls or a handful of people who are critics for this or critics on that. You wouldn't get anywhere in this world. We need people like President Bush who are serious people who spend a great deal of time thinking through direction for our country.
Oh my God.
Set us on that course and then have the courage and the perseverance to stay on that course.
Oh, Jesus Christ, to set us on a course of mass suicide? Oh, you sick old bastard. You sick old bastard. We need people like Bush, yeah, and someone you can manipulate like a marionette with a few spoken trigger words like 9/11 or known unknowns or what if the moon attacks, or by rhythmically pounding the podium in a very specific sequence that makes Bush's head start to bob and his feet go numb and his tongue roll out. We're not going to lose any battles out in the global war on terror in Iraq or Afghanistan. We're not. Hey, crazy man, what do you call it? What's happening over there? Winning? Is that what's going on? We are winning? Ah. I think we just have to accept it. He says that people have a right to say what they want to say. In other words, they have a right to sympathize with the terrorists, and we have a right to render them to Egypt every time they open their little bastard America-hating mouths. No wonder Limbaugh listeners are incapable of any kind of thought at all except what Rush and Rumsfeld and their psychopathic Christian fundamentalist ministers pump into their heads through that little diode in the back of their brains with a little wire sticking out. Here! Oh. And these people are told that liberals are terrorists. Jesus God. When we come back, I have to go to the bathroom here. When we come back, two short clips from today's Department of Defense briefing to wrap up RumFest 2006 for tonight. This is Air America. God, I hope there's toilet paper in the stall, Kathy.
Mike Malloy on Air America Radio.
Whether you have health insurance or not, chances are you don't have dental or vision coverage. But now, with the Optimum Health Discount Card, you and your family can get substantial savings of up to 60% off every time you visit your dentist or eye care professional. Because this is not insurance, everyone is accepted, even if you or your family members have pre-existing conditions. For only $9.95 a month, you, your spouse, and your children are all covered. Your membership includes access to our combined nationwide network of over 75,000 participating dentists and eye care professionals. Call right now and we'll also include for free the RX Saver discount prescription card. The RX Saver is accepted in most pharmacies nationwide and provides savings of up to 60% off most medications. Call our toll-free number now at 1-866-333-3000. That's 1-866-333-3000. Use the Optimum Health discount card risk-free for 30 days and start saving now on all of your dental and vision care needs. Call 1-866-333-3000. Again, 1-866-333-3000.
I'm Bill Crowley. The environmental group Greenpeace said today in a new report that more than 90,000 people were likely to die of cancer caused by radiation from the Chernobyl nuclear disaster. That contradicts a UN report that predicted the death toll about 4,000. The differing conclusions underlie the uncertainty that explains how the health effects of the world's worst nuclear accident approaches its 20th anniversary. A reactor at the Chernobyl nuclear power plant in Ukraine exploded April 26, 1986, sending radioactive clouds over much of Europe, the fallout particularly severe in parts of Ukraine, western Russia, and Belarus. Former Vice President Al Gore has a major campaign underway to try to change policies on global warming. Gore wants to raise awareness about a problem he calls a planetary emergency. He has a book and a movie called An Inconvenient Truth, released in May. And Gore has warned about the dangers of global warming for years. He argues for dramatic changes in the emission of greenhouse gases. Otherwise, he says, the planet's likely to experience a dramatic increase in violent storms, infectious disease, deadly heat waves, and rising sea levels. Congressional leaders say today schools should stop excluding large numbers of minority students' test scores when they report progress under the No Child Left Behind law. It was reported yesterday that schools have gotten federal permission to deliberately not count the test scores of almost 2 million students when they report academic progress by race as required by the law. The scores not counted overwhelmingly from minorities. Some leaders said Congress may need to intervene. A spokesman for the Republican chairman of the House Education Committee says the Education Department owes the public an explanation. Anytime you make changes in the military, you're going to run into opposition, is how Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld explains all the calls for his resignation from retired generals. Rumsfeld said today he's not thinking of quitting, and George Bush again expressed support for Rumsfeld. Still no agreement on how to deal with Iran. Top U.S. diplomats saying envoys from five permanent Security Council members talked about sanctions during a meeting in Moscow today. but could not agree on how to proceed. He says they did agree, though, there does have to be a strong response to Iran's nuclear program. This is Air America Radio News.
Welcome back, about 6 and a half past the hour. I'm going to play for you now probably the most tepid response I've ever heard from Rumsfeld. Apparently, he was down a quart and needed to go out and put his fangs in somebody real quick because, well, you listen. The question from... The terrified member of the press corps was, Mr. Secretary, among the criticisms that that have been made of you by several retired generals in recent days is that you've been dismissive and even contemptuous of the advice offered by senior military officers. They've also said that on a strategic level, they've faulted you for some failures in connection with the Iraq war, including failure to gain sufficient international support for the initial invasion. For example, on the Northern Front, and for post-combat operations and stability operations. Do you see validity in any of those criticisms? And is it appropriate for these to be aired publicly by retired generals?
Well, you know, I've been hearing about all of this, and I kind of would prefer to let a little time walk over it. There are important issues that are involved. There's no question about that. Change is difficult. It also happens to be urgently necessary. Transforming this department is important. Because of the importance of these matters that are being discussed, I'd like to reflect on them a bit.
Someone, quick, get him a baby. Get him just a chunky little baby on a bun. Quick. Some bitch is about to pass out. He needs some blood! He says, I've been hearing about all of this. You've been hearing about it? No. You hear about baseball scores. This is not something you've heard about. This is something that is pumping through the Pentagon. You know, that funny-looking building where you work. Quick! Someone bring him a baby! Now repeat the question, you little press corps bastard. But he goes on. He does.
Coming into work today, I did think about something that happened 30 years ago, I think close to this month.
Oh, no.
I was Secretary of Defense, and to my office at about 7 o'clock at night came a decision where I was told that the Army was recommending an M1 battle tank that had a 120-millimeter cannon, as I recall, instead of the 105 howitzer that the Army traditionally had. And the Army was in favor of the 105 and in favor of the diesel engine. I decided I wanted to take some time to think about it and ultimately announced that I thought that the Terman engine and the 120-millimeter cannon was preferable to the 105 and the diesel engine. Well, you would have thought the world had ended. The sky fell. Can you imagine? Can you imagine making that decision and breaking tradition for decades in this country? Can you imagine overturning what the service had proposed for a main battle tank? Well, it went on and on in the press, and it was a firestorm, and there were congressional hearings, and people saying how amazingly irresponsible it was. And it calmed down eventually. The tank has done a great job and served our country very well these intervening decades.
Now, in the meantime, while he's saying this amazing story from 30 years ago about a tank, the press corps is staring at him and blinking at him in disbelief. He says, can you imagine making that decision and breaking tradition for decades in this country? Yeah. Everywhere I go, Rummy, people are still talking about the transition from the 120 to the 105. It's all you hear at the bar these days. Jesus Christ, we can't stop talking about it. Wow, what a decision. Your tank decision 30 years ago is exactly like your present day disastrous planning in Iraq, only it's not. Well, it is, but it really isn't, you see. Someone get him another baby. About 6 weeks from now, June 2nd, if all goes as planned, there will be a mushroom cloud over the Nevada test site in the desert about 90 miles northwest of Las Vegas. No, it's not going to be a nuclear test. We haven't had one of those since 1992. this will be a conventional explosion in the sense that it's not nuclear. It's a 700-ton bomb. 1,000,004 pounds? The mushroom cloud will be nothing more than dust, we are told. It's an experiment, you see, for so-called bunker bomb weapons, now in development, to see how well they might penetrate solid rock formations. The test is called Divine Strike. Divine Strike. And it will detonate 700 tons of heavy ammonium nitrate fuel oil poured into this 36-foot hole. That was the sort of weapon that brought down the Murrah Federal Building in Oklahoma. The planned explosion has drawn the attention of Senate Minority Leader Harry Reid, who says, I'm concerned the tests of this magnitude have been planned without providing Nevadans with any information about the possible impact on their safety or health. Senator Reid, sit down and shut up. The required state approvals and air quality permits were issued in January by your state government. Your congressional delegation, which I assume includes you, were alerted in December. So sit down, Reed, and shut up, or else stand up like a man and demand what the hell is going on. Nuclear bombs, Harry, in Iran. Mr. Reed, nuclear bombs in Iran.
I'm concerned that tests of this magnitude have been planned without providing Nevadans with any information about the possible impact on their health or safety.
Does Harry not understand that George W. Bush and Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld and these murderous psychopaths don't care a whit, Senator, about the impact on the health of Nevadans. Please. Please. Get off your ass, Reed. Get off your ass. Get some of the other Democratic leaders, quote, off their asses and go to the White House. Here's the address, 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. Walk in. Don't forget to show your IDs or wear your little button or they'll send a cop to beat you up. But walk in there. Go ahead, Senator. Walk into the White House. Walk into the Oval Office and ask this psychotic son of a bitch what he's doing. Oh, no. Not you. You're a Democratic leader.
Now, I don't know that we've been told out here in Nevada about, you know, what kind of effect all the dust is going to have. You know, we have a lot of people out here, you know, who are allergic to dust. And, you know, there's Las Vegas and there's Reno. And, Jesus, you know, we've got a gambling industry here. Oh, I just don't understand this president we've got.
Listening to the Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
Thanks a lot for the ride home. Hey, no problem, man. Just because you're a sophomore doesn't mean I can't talk to you.
Thanks.
Hey, while you're here, want to take a hit of some weed? Some good stuff. Here you go.
This is the moment your guidance can prevent your teen from smoking marijuana. So visit theantidrug.com and learn how to set clear rules about drugs. Parents, the anti-drug. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
Hey, Truth Seekers, Mike Malloy here, and you can hear me, of course, on Air America Radio. If you're as fed up with the Bush crime family as I am, you need to go to ImpeachBushGame.com. That's ImpeachBushGame.com, where you can get the new board game, Impeached, that points out the lies, incompetence, and stupidity of George W. and the entire Bush crime family. You'll have fun playing this eye-opening board game that dares to peek into the Bush administration. Impeached will challenge your ability to lie, cheat, and steal. I'm for real here. Order your game now at ImpeachBushGame.com.
They never stop thinking about new ways to harm our country and our people, and neither do we.
Past the hour, Cindy writes in and wants me to remind folks that the site where this 700-ton explosion is going to occur with the mushroom cloud going up that's, don't worry, nothing but dust, is where the United States, it's in the vicinity of where the United States set off how many nuclear bombs during the 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s, and 80s. How much radioactive material is lying in the desert out there just waiting to be blown up into a cloud. So the best case scenario when this bomb goes off, 25, 30 years from now, people downwind will have another rash of unexplained cancers. These people, I don't know. I can't think anymore. My head is turning into a great big bowl of grits. I just can't think anymore. We have splattered depleted uranium all over Middle Europe, thanks to Bill Clinton. We have splattered depleted uranium all over Iraq, thanks to both Bushes. We are bringing home soldiers who are sick with the effects of depleted uranium, and now we are going to blow off a 700-ton bomb at the Nevada Proving Grounds. What did it prove? It proved that we're all insane. This is from University of California, San Diego, UCSD. 13 of the nation's most prominent physicists have written a letter to President Bush calling U.S. plans to reportedly use nuclear weapons against Iran gravely irresponsible and warning that such action would have, quote, disastrous consequences for the security of the United States and the world, unquote. The physicists, including 5 Nobel laureates, a recipient of the National Medal of Science, and 3 past presidents of the American Physical Society, the nation's preeminent professional society for physicists. The letter was prompted by recent articles in the Washington Post, New Yorker, and other publications that one of the options being considered by the White House in a military confrontation with Iran includes the use of nuclear bunker busters against underground facilities. These reports were neither confirmed nor denied by White House and Pentagon officials. The letter was initiated by Jorge Hirsch, a professor of physics, University of California, San Diego, who last fall put together a petition signed by more than 1,800 physicists that repudiated new U.S. nuclear weapons policies that include preemptive use of nuclear weapons against non-nuclear adversaries. Hirsch also has published 15 articles in recent months documenting the dangers associated with a potential U.S. nuclear strike on Iran. Quote, we are members of the profession that brought nuclear weapons into existence, and we feel strongly that it is our professional duty to contribute our efforts to prevent their misuse, says Hirsch. He goes on, physicists know best about the devastating effects of the weapons they created, and these eminent physicists speak for thousands of our colleagues. The fact that the existence, he went on, of this plan has not been denied by the administration should be a cause of great alarm, even if it is only one of several plans being considered. The public should join these eminent scientists in demanding that the administration publicly renounce such a misbegotten option against a non-nuclear country like Iran. End quote. The letter points out that nuclear weapons are unique among weapons of mass destruction and that nuclear weapons in today's arsenals have a total power of more than 200,000 times the energy of the bomb that leveled Hiroshima, which caused the deaths of more than 100,000 people. The report, the letter notes that there are no sharp lines between small and large nuclear weapons, nor between nuclear weapons targeting facilities and those targeting armies or cities, and that the use by the United States of nuclear weapons after 60 years of non-use will make the use of nuclear weapons by others more likely. The physicists write, quote, once the U.S. uses a nuclear weapon again, it will heighten the probability that others will too. In a world with more nuclear nations and no longer a taboo against the use of nuclear weapons, there will be a greatly enhanced risk that regional conflicts could expand into global thermonuclear war with the potential to destroy our civilization. The letter echoes the main objection of last fall's physicist petition, stressing that the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty will be irreversibly damaged by the use or even the threat of use of nuclear weapons by a nuclear nation against a non-nuclear one, with disastrous consequences for the security of the United States and the world. Quote, it is gravely irresponsible for the U.S. as the greatest superpower to consider courses of action that could eventually lead to the widespread destruction of life on the planet. We urge the administration to announce publicly that it is taking the nuclear option off the table. And we urge the American people to make their voices heard on this matter. The physicists are sending copies of their letter to their elected representatives requesting that the issue be urgently addressed in the U.S. Senate and House of Representatives.
This is the Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
Whether you have health insurance or not, chances are you don't have dental or vision coverage. But now, with the Optimum Health Discount Card, you and your family can get substantial savings of up to 60% off every time you visit your dentist or eye care professional. Because this is not insurance, everyone is accepted, even if you or your family members have pre-existing conditions. For only $9.95 a month, you, your spouse, and your children are all covered. Your membership includes access to our combined nationwide network of over 75,000 participating dentists and eye care professionals. Call right now and we'll also include for free the RX Saver discount prescription card. The RX Saver is accepted in most pharmacies nationwide and provides savings of up to 60% off most medications. Call our toll-free number now at 1-866-333-3000. That's 1-866-333-3000. Use the Optimum Health discount card risk-free for 30 days and start saving now on all of your dental and vision care needs. Call 1-866-333-3000. Again, 1-866-333-3000.
Hey, True Seekers, Mike Malloy here. Are you as alarmed as I am by the assault on our freedoms by the religious right? An essential element of freedom is the right to choose or reject religious beliefs. And this is why I fully support the Freedom From Religion Foundation as it takes the lead in challenging the growing threat from the religious right in the United States. If you'd like further information on the dangers of living in a theocracy, please call 800-335-4021. 800-335-4021 or visit their website, ffrf.org.
Your beautiful tree, attacked by insects, and the damage isn't pretty. So backed by Bayer's 100-plus years of crop science expertise, Bayer Advanced created Tree and Shrub Insect Control with Merit, the only product to protect your tree for a full 12 months without any spraying. Just mix and pour at the trunk, and it's shielded from roots to tops. We don't hate bugs. We just love trees. Bayer Advanced Tree and Shrub Insect Control. Better science, better results.
high higher. It's more of Mike Malloy.
Six before the hour. Michael writes in to tell me it's not divine strike, this test. It's titled Divine Strake, S-T-R-A-K-E. And dictionary.com says that strake, the definition for strake, is a single continuous line of planking or metal plating extending on a vessel's hull from stem to stern. Okay. Then so be it. Divine strake. But I'll tell you, Michael, it's the modifier there that has me a bit upset. Whether it's strike or strake or hog snot, the fact that it is preceded by the word divine, that's the part that's scary, right? But thanks for the correction. Let's do some phone calls. Matt is calling from Madison, Wisconsin. Matt, thanks for holding on. Welcome to the program.
Oh, I won't annoy you this time, Mike. I recognize Bush because I suffer from let me put it this way. When you came to Madison, me and all the mentally ill people in Madison pose less of a threat to you than the Republican members of Congress.
Well, I have no problem with that, Matt. I have mental illness all through my family, but your point is what?
Well, I mean, I look at this Bush administration, and I recognize my own. I mean, Bush is just, I don't know, he's learning impaired, obviously. I mean,
right.
Donald Rumsfeld clearly has paranoid schizophrenia, and Dick Cheney has, he's a sociopath. I mean,
he's
like a two-year-old. He's like Ted Bundy. He is just completely incapable of understanding how his actions,
you're talking about Bush now. Bush is unable to understand how his actions affect people.
Well, I mean, Dick Cheney doesn't care. That's what I mean.
Right.
He just, how his actions affect other people. Yes, Bush doesn't understand. Dick Cheney just doesn't care.
I absolutely agree with you on that one.
And it's interesting. Rush Limbaugh ridicules people with mental illness, and he's the drug addict. I'm not a drug addict.
Mm-hmm.
The most I've ever done is smoked a few joints in my life. And interestingly, I didn't smoke pot until I was like 25. And it's like, this guy, here he is, all these ditto heads worship him. Now me, I'm this nobody who's living on assistance. And here's this millionaire right-winger, and he's a drug addict. Well, they want to put me in jail for smoking a little pot, but, oh, Rush Limbaugh, he's taking Oxycontin. Oh, no. Oh, you got to forgive him. He just slipped up.
But Matt, he made himself deaf, so there is kind of a karmic whip. Or a cosmic whip that will flicker through the universe and snap your damn head off at the right time. And by the way, as far as getting the ice pick out, I only use the ice pick when somebody starts to ramble on and on. And you got to admit, when you were talking about movies the last time you called in, it was just rambling. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I tend to do that. But you and Air America are one of the few things. If it wasn't for Air America and the progressive publications and the books of Barbara Einright, I probably would have lost it a long time ago. Nice talking to you again, Mike.
Well, if it weren't for you calling in, I would have lost it long ago. Always good to hear from you, Matt. No more movie reviews, all right?
Okay, I won't do that to you, Mike.
Email them to me.
Okay, bye-bye.
Take care, Matt. Sam is calling from somewhere in the great north, Canada, somewhere in Canada. Sam, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike. I've been listening to both you and Randy talk about the use of nukes in Iran, and I recently wrote a paper on the first use of the atomic bomb.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to let your listeners know that in my research, I found that Japan was willing to submit to defeat so long as they were allowed to keep their emperor.
Right.
The U.S. refused these terms, preferring unconditional surrender, which they got after vaporizing two cities. What surprised me was that the U.S. did inevitably let the Japanese keep their emperor. Now, the point is that the first use of nukes was both the last act of World War II and the first act of the Cold War,
mm-hmm.
but primarily the latter. the first time we used nukes, it signaled the transition from World War II to the Cold War, and I believe Bush plans to carry out the very same act against the Iranians, whose nuclear arsenal is a fabrication of both Iranian and American propaganda. My fear is that this nuke attack will be the first act of World War III.
Oh, God, Sam, I hope you're not right, because there is no such thing as nuclear war. There is only the instance of nuclear annihilation, but there's no such thing as a nuclear war. It can't happen. When there is an exchange of thermonuclear weapons, and they're no longer nuclear, as you know, they're now thermonuclear. And when that exchange occurs, this was the big fear during the 50 years, 60 years of the Cold War. It would be over in a day, and or less than a day. It'd be over in several hours, and what would be left would be nothing. There's no such thing as controlling a nuclear exchange. Once it begins, it goes on until, now this is not true obviously with Iran, but it was certainly true with the Soviet Union and the United States. Once it began, there was no stopping until all of the nuclear silos, the missile silos, were empty. And that meant absolute annihilation of the entire planet. Now, I guess what's happened here is when you have people who are genuinely mad, in control of a nuclear arsenal the size of the one we have, or half the size of the one we have, with the belief that A, God talks to the leadership of this cabal, and B, that using nuclear weapons is A, justifiable, and B, somehow logical, then you have the potential, you have the setup for utter and absolute, just total madness, disaster. I don't know. I've said on this program many times, what's the tipping point? At what point do the American does the American population take to the streets and remove these people from office? I don't know. Is this the tipping point?
Well, what scares me the most, Mike, is that this man with his finger on the button can't pronounce the name of the weapon correctly. I mean, are people around him afraid to say, "Oh, Mr. President, it's nuclear, not nuclear"?
Yeah. Yeah, I hear you. All right, Sam, thanks.
All right, take care, Mike.
All right, you too. Thanks for checking in. I appreciate hearing from you. Jim is calling from Stockton, California. Jim, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike.
Hey.
Hi. I just had a couple of observation here. One of the reasons Bush is threatening Iran is that, they're meddling in Iraq and Bush can't win. This is an embarrassment to him. And our poor troops are entrenched and can't overcome the opposing forces. We don't have enough troops to invade Iran, so that's why the decision on nuclear weapons is being entertained. They can't bring back the draft because that would recreate the 60s and recreate a resistance here in the U.S. Where the so-called liberals kind of wimped out and got co-opted back then, and that's why we're here. We're reaping what we sowed.
But, Jim, I have a question, and I don't know that you can answer it because I damn sure can't. I can only hypothesize. But why the almost sexual immediacy of wanting to attack Iran at all, much less with nuclear weapons?
Well, there's a simple reason for that. They went over to Iraq for the oil. That is the main reason. And now because if they lose the oil, that means the downfall of the American oil cartel. And that means, it's over with and the world would be much better off. And they need this oil to control the American people, the world, and we'd be a lot better off without it, without this cartel and oil itself, because it's destroying our earth.
Presently. And that's all correct, and I agree with you, but surely there must be advisors around Bush who are telling him that a nuclear attack on a non-nuclear country comprised of 90 million people will not be tolerated by the rest of the world.
Like you said, Bush is a sociopath. I mean, him and his oil buddies, they're trying to control the whole situation. If they lose out, then everything falls. And we, their situation would fall and we'd come up and be a better people. And, I just want to say one other, are you still there, Mike?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah, I just wanted to make another comment about the Middle East. A lot of this, and Israel, a lot of this is driven by ignorance
and fear, and that's what they thrive off of, Bush and his cronies. And, you know, back in the 40s and 50s, you know, the Palestinians were displaced by these European Jews from Hitler's bloody hands. And, you know, so if you can kind of, you know, empathize with the Palestinians, you know, because they weren't, these aren't the original Jews per se. But, and, you know, I just want to encourage everyone to read just the introduction to the Quran by Maulana Muhammad Ali, the Green Book, and you'll get firsthand knowledge. And Christians and Muslims have a lot in common, and they're playing on our fears, and you know, and that's the whole situation. So if the end of the oil cartel will be the end of all our problems. I just want to say that, Mike, okay?
All right, well, thanks.
And God bless you, Mike. God bless you. God is with you. I know he is, okay?
Take care, Jim. Of course, I don't believe that, but as far as the Muslims and the Christians, well, come on, the Muslims, the Christians and the Jews, they all share the same God. They all, in fact, they all share the same founder, Abraham. So there's no difference here between Christian, Muslim, and Jew. As far as I'm concerned, all three religions are murderous mental aberrations, and the world would be better off if all three religions just evaporated tomorrow and it cleared the minds of how many billions of people. So, you know, let's not just talk about Christians and Muslims. The Jews and the Christians and the Muslims are all together in this madness.
The Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
I'm so glad you got tickets to this concert.
Yeah, definitely. These guys put on a killer show.
Great, let's go.
Wait, it's just the opening band. Let's get a little stone first. It's crazy strong. Here you go.
This is the moment your guidance can prevent your teen from smoking marijuana. So visit theantidrug.com and learn how to set clear rules about drugs. Parents, The Anti-Drug.
Paid for by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Some of the best minds in the automotive industry, using some of the most sophisticated design facilities. Engineers from Ford Motor Company are working together on a common mission, creating safer cars for our families and our children. Ford is renewing its commitment to driving American innovation. At the core of that effort is your safety, because every single life saved is worth it. Ford, driving American innovation.
Boom, 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 boom. Bang, 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 bang. Boom, 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 boom. Bang, 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 bang. I love the way you walk, and I love the way you talk. When you walk that walk, and you talk that talk. You knocks me out.
In your day, streaming with Mike Malloy on Air America Radio.
Boom, 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 boom. Bang, bang,
it's about 10 before the hour.
Boom, 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 boom.
Steve is calling from Kansas City. Steve, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Yeah.
Hey, Mike, how you doing, man?
Doing fine.
Hey, last night or the night before, Kathy asked you a question, and you avoided answering the question, and like you ignored it. So sometimes silence speaks louder than words. I was wondering if I could get you to answer the question.
Sure. What was the question?
She asked you if you'd ever worn high heel shoes and a corset.
You did? You asked me that? Kathy asked me that?
Yeah, because you were talking about Rumsfeld's different torture methods, and you said for some reason Rumsfeld's idea of torture is dressing up
in high heels
and leading him around with a dog leash.
Right, okay.
And I said, have you ever worn high heels? That's torture.
Okay, the answer, Steve, is no, not yet. I mean, you never know what might happen, but not yet. No, I've never worn high heels or a corset.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, it wouldn't matter if you had. I just wondered why you kind of avoided the question. Hey, I got it all figured out what's going to happen, Mike.
Now, wait a minute. How much time did you spend thinking about why I, quote, avoided the question, end quote?
Hey, Mike, you know what's going to happen, man? They're going to put this image of a mushroom cloud in the minds of everybody in the world. And then the 4th of July will come along, and everything is orchestrated towards the election. And then the summer will go through, and gas prices will reach their peak at the same moment that the consumption reaches its peak, and then it'll be Labor Day, and then school will start, new TV programs. They like Saban's family in, World Series, Monday Night Football. And about 3 weeks before the election, a Marine outpost up near the Iranian border will get hit by a dastardly mortar attack. And there'll be somber speeches and hail to the chief and ruffles and flashes. And that's where it's going to go.
I have worn pantyhose.
Huh?
Oh, nothing. Hey, Steve, thanks for checking in, pal. I do appreciate it. Thanks a lot. Rose is calling from Santa Barbara, California. Rose, welcome to the program.
Oh, hi, Mike, and welcome to Santa Barbara. We finally got you here.
Oh, really?
Yes, you started here last week.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, and so I'm thrilled.
I guess I missed the email from Air America Radio Network telling me that I was on Santa Barbara now. Oh, well, it doesn't really matter.
Maybe they don't know. Believe it or not, this is not Air America station. It carries Air America programs, though.
Well, it would not surprise me to find out that the executives of Air America Radio would not really know what stations are carrying the program. That would be no surprise at all, Rose.
Well, you're here, and I'm grateful.
I am, too. Very much so.
I just wanted to ask you a question and what your opinion is. I'm wondering if Bush's obstinacy with respect to Rumsfeld doesn't have a lot to do with the fact that he'd have to go for advice and consent in front of the Senate for a new Secretary of Defense. And that could open up a whole keg of worms, which could really be rather devastating for him.
That's a good point. Although the Republicans in the Senate, I mean, if Bush proposed, Donald Duck, the Republicans would say it's a good choice, and the Democrats would just sit there quietly and say, well, if he ever really proposes somebody we don't like, then we'll resist. But, you know, there's nothing really wrong with Donald Duck. What the hell?
You could be right.
That's the Democratic leadership in the Senate. I'm sorry, but that's the truth, and you know it.
Yeah, well, I was just hoping that maybe if they got their shot at having to give advice and consent for a new Secretary
well, yeah, you're
of Defense,
right.
They might
and
get some backbone.
Sure. if we lived if America was still a country where the United States Senate or the Democratic Party or the separation of powers or the balance of powers or the canceling out of one power, if any of that was still in effect, why, of course, no matter who Bush proposed, that person would be grilled and grilled with vigor, not just by Republicans, but also by Democrats. And if it was a political shill who was sitting there, the Democrats would raise enough sand that he would be filibustered or the appointment would never go through. But we don't live there anymore. That's the problem. We live in a country where the Republicans control everything, and the Democrats are in the leadership positions are content to sit back and say, oh, woe is us, woe is us. Well, we'll stop it the next time. You know, not Alito, not Roberts. We'll wait until something really important comes up, and then you'll see we'll have lots of spine and backbone then. No, I'm sorry. It's gone, Rose. It's all gone. Until the Democrats are removed from office and replaced with fake Democrats, and then the fake Democrats need to be removed from office and replaced with real Democrats. And that's a long way down the road. I hope we can do it. I just hope we can do it.
I do too, Mike, because I think that we've really gone the wrong direction. I'm really saddened by, you know, where we're at. I don't want to overreact, but as a country, I'm saddened by where we're at.
I hear you. I don't want to overreact either, but I can't. I don't feel that anything I do, no matter how much screaming or in craziness I do on this program, is an overreaction. It's, you know, I mean, I react this way when I'm home, when Molly's taking a nap, Kathy's gone, you know, and I'm watching something on CNN, and I start the same kind of screaming. It's not overreacting. It's just like this frustration and rage and fear. I'm scared to death.
Yeah, that's right.
I really am. Well, Rose, I'm glad we're on in Santa Barbara. Thanks for letting me know. Take
care.
So
are we, Mike. Thank you so much.
All right. Take care. Good to hear from you. Okay. More of your phone calls when we come back. So do stick around. Okay? Okay. This is Air America. I'm Mike Malloy.
America Radio.
The following is a message from Brutus at the National Disaster Search Dog Foundation.
Last October, three buildings collapsed. I was called in to help. Two little kids were missing. I looked everywhere. Then I found them. They were crying. We all were.
Be part of the search. Call 1-888-4-K-9-HERO or visit searchdogfoundation.org. Made possible by Searchdog USA.
Ooh, are you okay?
Oh, it's my arthritis pain.
Here, try my Aleve.
People with arthritis are sharing their good news about Aleve. Just two Aleve have the strength to stop arthritis pain all day. That would take 8 extra strength Tylenol. So try Aleve and see for yourself. Then share your good news. Comparison based on 24-hour label dosing. Use as directed for minor arthritis pain.
May is Arthritis Month. Join Aleve and the Arthritis Foundation for the annual Arthritis Walk taking place nationwide. For more information, visit AleveGoodNews.com.
Air America Radio News. I'm Jeff Weiser. Oil prices hit an all-time high Tuesday, closing at just over $71 a barrel. That's bad news for drivers who are paying an average of $2.78 a gallon nationwide. At the White House Tuesday, President Bush expressed renewed concerns about rising gas prices. He said the global supply and demand crunch is partly responsible for rising prices. Pete Najarian of InsideOptions.com says the prices continue to rise even without any distribution problems.
And this is without any hurricanes right now. This is without too many disruptions that are going on even in the Middle East. Between those two factors, it wouldn't be surprising as we push closer to summer driving that we wouldn't be paying a lot more at the pump.
Najarian predicts that gas will go to at least $3.50 a gallon. He says higher gas prices will cause a burden in all areas of the economy since consumers will spend more on gas and less on other items. Los Angeles County health officials say a woman has been diagnosed with the first case of bubonic plague in the county since 1984. Spokesperson Laureen Muscola says the woman is hospitalized and doing okay, but they're still not sure where she became infected.
You know, if people are severely ill with headaches, high fevers, they have either buboes, which are these really infected lymph nodes from getting the bite of an infected flea, they should go to see their doctor, which they probably would anyway because they would be so sick. If you just have a few flea bites on your legs, like a lot of people in this world do, don't go running off to a doctor. You're probably fine.
She says the best way to avoid contact with any potentially infected fleas in the wild is to wear long sleeve shirts and pants and use an insect repellent containing DEET. Boeing is one business happy to see the Chinese president visit the Seattle area this week. China pledged to buy 80 airplanes from Boeing for an estimated $5 billion. This comes at a time when many countries are looking to competitor Airbus. Boeing president and CEO Alan Mulally says Boeing and China have a long history of working together.
Well, it's pretty exciting. China's one of the great economies of the world, and they're a great Boeing customer, and they just completed a purchase of 80 737s last week and 60 787s. So it's really neat to have them here.
You're listening to Air America Radio News. I'm Jeff Weiser.
Welcome back. 7 past the hour. Oh, well, this is good news. Senator Charles Schumer, Democrat of New York, called Tuesday for an investigation into possible price fixing by oil companies. The New York Democrat at a news conference in front of a Hess station in Manhattan suggested that companies are deliberately underproducing, CNN Money.com reported. Schumer said, quote, the bottom line is they are producing at 85% capacity when they should be producing. Yeah, that's the ticket, Senator Schumer. Let's investigate for price fixing. From Big Dave in Queens, a simple solution for Democrats would be to immediately put forth legislation forbidding Bush from attacking Iran without congressional approval and from forbidding Bush from using nuclear weapons. But knowing the spine of Harry Reid, Joe Lieberman, and their ilk, I have more confidence that a jellyfish would put forth such legislation than a Democrat like Reid or Lieberman. Well, I agree with you, Big Dave, but Democrats can't introduce legislation of any sort. Republicans control all of that. The Democrats can try to find some unconscious drunk Republican in the cloakroom and get him or her to co-sponsor or to sponsor, but the Democrats can't introduce anything. They're barely able, by the system of the House and the Senate, they're barely able to attach amendments that usually get voice voted out of existence. So good idea, Dave, but unless I'm all wrong on that, the Democrats can't introduce any legislation. They simply can't. This is from Dave. Regarding the June 2nd science project, the bomb. Here is the website for the Western Shoshone Defense Project, a native tribal organization that is attempting to preserve native rights. The test is scheduled to take place on disputed land. In other words, land stolen from the Shoshone peoples. Please distribute this web address on your show and encourage your listeners to make contact to see if a massive demonstration at or near the site might be of assistance to prevent or draw attention to the test and the native peoples' ongoing struggle to keep what belongs to them. You say that all we have in common is the fact that we are outraged and that we are sitting on our bums and not doing anything about it. Let's do something about it. We need to take a page from the immigrant protesters' handbook. They put people on the streets in large numbers that us suburban white people have not done since the 70s. Let's see if a few thousand people might draw attention to this test and what it truly represents, a science project preceding a nuke attack. Dave. Please don't use my last name. Hell, use my last name. And then he puts it down there in Savannah. No, Dave, you live in Savannah, so I'm not going to use your last name. The website, WSDP.org. That stands for Western Shoshone Defense Project. You got it? Don't email me and ask me for it. WSDP.org. And this is weird. And then back to your phone calls. This is really weird. This is from Cindy. I was just returning home from Vancouver, Washington, northbound on Interstate 5, and I saw the sickest sight. It was a Union Pacific train with Dick Cheney and his pals on board. They were traveling north to the home of Bill Gates in the Seattle area, coming from a fundraiser for Republican U.S. Senate candidate Mike McGavick in Spokane. The weirdest thing was this. We rode next to the northbound train for 30 miles, all the time watching the surrounding traffic. Nobody saw Cheney on board the train except us. We felt like we were in the Twilight Zone, all alone, witnessing an awful, insane thing that nobody else cared about or even cared to see. Now, I ask you this. Was this a message from the karmic powers? That nobody cares or will witness the evil in our leadership? It was very disheartening. And to boot, we were incensed that that awful man could come so close to our own neighborhood. That type of crap was free to come to our neighborhood. We felt angry about that. I won't tell you who was riding in the car, but we all felt the same way. This is sort of creepy. Yeah, well, what that's about, of course, is I think the whole world knows, and Prairie 2 pointed it out. Hey, Mike, did you hear the head of China's government is snubbing Bush to meet Bill Gates and 100 other businessmen at Bill's house for dinner tonight? He goes from there to similar engagements and will just drop by the White House for a quick photo op. Is he putting the monkey in his place like the third world dictator Bush is, or is he just giving the press something to quack about instead of Bush's other problems? Hu Jintao? The Chinese premier or president or whoever it is that's here, the head of the Chinese government, I think truly doesn't give a tinker's damn about George Bush. Why should he? There's no there. You know, the Chinese have been around for, 10,000 years? They have seen subhumans like George Bush come and go, thousands of them, over the millennia. George Bush means nothing. We have a $200 billion trade deficit with just China. So the Chinese care about this freak? They couldn't care less. They do care about Bill Gates. They do care about the money people around the globe. They do care about, all of a sudden the Chinese have decided instead of ripping off software, they're going to buy it. Oh, well, what about that? They're going to respect intellectual property rights. As if that mattered. As if it matters. It doesn't matter worth a damn. Intellectual property rights. Oh, okay. But no, the Chinese leader is here not to make some sort of a deal with Bush or show Bush respect or try to work out some kind of global agreements, joint agreements between the two countries. China doesn't give a rat's ass about George Bush. Frankly, they don't care too much about the United States either. We are a flea flickering around. We're a gnat flickering around the face of China. And, you know, the 21st century is the Chinese century. Come on, do you have any doubts about that? The Chinese leadership understands when they send one of their people to the United States, they're here for the technology, they're here for the trade deals, they are not here to play kissy face with a freak like George Bush. The Chinese don't give a damn about it. Plus, they don't respect him. Do you not remember? Way back, shortly after Bush seized power in this country, when a U.S. spy plane crashed after an encounter with a Chinese MiG. It crashed onto a Chinese island off the coast, or was it on mainland China? Jesus, it seems like a million years ago. And Bush did nothing but just suck and apologize and weep and wail and wring his hands because, you know, the cowards around him. Do you think Rumsfeld is going to order a nuclear strike on China? Do you think Cheney is going to rattle his sabers to the Chinese leadership? No, of course not. They said that George apologize. Do whatever you have to do. Apologize twice, thrice. Get down on your knees. Be Monica. Do anything. And remember how our spy plane came home in crates on Soviet airliners? The Chinese look at Bush as an impetuous child that needs to be smacked down and told to shut up and go to his room.
We'll decide if we don't get the right amount. Don't misunderestimate me.
I think a useful tool of foreign policy for our country is try to let the sun shine in.
I'm running on the legs of responsibility. So if you love me or you hate me, don't be done.
listening to The Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
Who was the first automaker to introduce factory-installed safety belts and roll stability control? First to introduce emergency trunk releases and offer head and chest side airbags? And who is working on future safety innovations, like lane departure warning and blind spot alert systems? It's Ford Motor Company. Ford engineers are working to help protect children, keep families safer, and save lives. Ford, driving American innovation.
The point of commercials is, of course, to get you to do something. For example, we'd like you to go to Geico.com and get a free rate quote. But if you're still not reaching for your mouse, at least do this for me. Call a friend who has Geico and ask some questions. Can Geico really save me that much money? Is their claim service as good as, well, they claim? Are they really available 24/7? Once you get your answers, we'll be right here.
Go to Geico.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15%.
The fascinating country that is significant in its size. Its economy is still small but growing.
The Chinese economy is still small? Oh, you dumb bastard. How can this man be this ignorant? How can this man be this ignorant? Its economy is still small. Well, George, it's big enough that we bought $200 billion more from their small economy last year than they bought from us. Oh, never mind. Oh, Jesus. Ed is calling from Toledo, Ohio. Ed, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike.
Hey,
having
Ed.
A great show tonight. Hey,
yeah.
I was looking in the DSA today, the Divided States of America Today that I read sometimes.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And I was looking on page 13A, and they had this thing in there that was pretty good about the comparison of the Spanish Inquisition to everything they were going through here today. I thought it was amazing. Like, I was reading it, I just couldn't believe it. Like, I was reading it, I was going, wow, this is everything that is, you know. And I used to watch Monty Python make fun of the Spanish. That was my favorite bit that they did, where they'd run in and, you know, ask the 20 questions or whatever, you know, they used to do that.
right. Yes, I'm real familiar with it.
I love that. Yeah, I just couldn't believe it. I read that, and, you know, it was the waterboarding, how we've perfected it, is what they're talking about.
Now, like, this was in USA Today?
Yeah, it was on page 13A.
I'll be damned. I'm going to have to go online and take a look at that.
You should, and it was talking about, you know, it really detailed a lot of the different, you know, but you were just talking about the, you know, you said don't discriminate, you know, the Jews are included in this problem also, but...
Well, in the religious problem, I think my caller was trying to differentiate between Muslims and Christians on one side and Jews on the other, and, you know, to me that won't work. You know, if we're talking strictly religion, all three, those are the three peoples of the book.
Right.
They share the same founder, you might say, Abraham. They believe in the same God. They have the same creation myths, you know, the whole bit. So, you know, it just when I think it was an attempt to isolate the Jews and paint them as the bad guys. Now, if you want to get into the politics of the Middle East, there's blame enough to go around for all three groups.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I was raised in Texas, served in the Marines, and, you know, it just can't believe what's going on today, because the only association I have ever made with, you know, Jesus and all this is peace. I mean, once it transcended, I don't know if you know who Robert Tilton is.
Oh, yeah, the minister?
Well, people where I grew up were, you know, had children going to his school, and that was an eye-opener for me when I saw that. And my aunt, as a pastor in Dallas area, the guy skipped town, and turns out he hasn't been paying the rent and all that. He's been pocketing everything for the last 10 years.
Right. Well, anybody who has a ministry on television, to me, immediately is a lying, snake-hustling son of a bitch that God should, if there was a God, just crush.
Why don't people, you know, are you just blind? Like, you just look at this, and the guy takes all your money, and then you just go, he was a good man. He just took all my money. Oh, okay,
yeah.
Wake up. You know?
There are so many absolute out-and-out bunko artists, con men, lying, cheating, sneak, filthy freaks who prey on the natural ignorance of people and the natural fear of people and sell them this religious claptrap and laugh all the way to the bank. You know, as they are driving to the bank, they stop at every motel along the way so they can have sex with their line of paid sex partners.
Go down the list. Benny Hinn, Jimmy Swaggart.
All of them.
It's not like there's just one. And I could excuse a lot of people if there was just one that got away with it, but the list is so long. I can't, you know, it's disgusting to me. But keep it up, man. I love your show.
All right, thanks, Ed. Maybe someday we'll be on WSPD up there, and you don't have to listen. How do you listen, XM or online?
I got you on XM, and I got to say, when they kicked Alan Combs off of here, I was doing a little dance. Because I used to have to catch you on the replay at midnight. And,
well, that's we're forever indebted to XM for making the switch. Thanks, Ed.
All right, bye, Mike.
All right, take care. Who's that one TV preacher, Kathy? At one, say baby. Who is that? Who's that freak?
I think isn't that Swaggart or is that no Ernest Angley?
Ernest Angley, that's right. I used to watch him. a decade ago when he would make these low-rent Billy Graham crusades into foreign countries where nobody spoke English. And all the people in the crowd, thousands of them, would all be brown, different shades of brown.
And deaf.
And he would have on stage, well, it's from all those tropical diseases, he'd have on stage with him a brown person who would interpret into the native tongue whatever Ernest Angley was saying. And they would always bring up some little boy, usually little boy, who was deaf, had been deaf since birth because of all the worms inside his blood. And Angley would stick his fingers into that boy's ears and pop them out. And then he'd say, "Say baby! Say baby!" You know, and the little kid would go, "Hey." And Angley would say, "Another miracle of Jesus!"
Tell the people that are going to hell. When the lies are over and the devil is done. Tell the people that are going to hell. When the lies are over and the devil is done. Tell the people that are going to hell.
This is the Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
Whether you have health insurance or not, chances are you don't have dental or vision coverage. But now, with the Optimum Health Discount Card, you and your family can get substantial savings of up to 60% off every time you visit your dentist or eye care professional. Because this is not insurance, everyone is accepted, even if you or your family members have pre-existing conditions. For only $9.95 a month, you, your spouse, and your children are all covered. Your membership includes access to our combined nationwide network of over 75,000 participating dentists and eye care professionals. Call right now and we'll also include for free the RX Saver discount prescription card. The RX Saver is accepted in most pharmacies nationwide and provides savings of up to 60% off most medications. Call our toll-free number now at 1-866-333-3000. That's 1-866-333-3000. Use the Optimum Health discount card risk-free for 30 days and start saving now on all of your dental and vision care needs. Call 1-866-333-3000. Again, 1-866-333-3000.
Do you know the power of financial empowerment? Ambassador Andrew Young, humanitarian and educator, has teamed with Operation Hope founder John Bryant to help eradicate poverty through financial literacy education. Mr. Bryant, how is Operation Hope meeting this challenge?
To empower 5 million youth in 5 years in financial literacy.
Ambassador Young, what's your role in financial literacy education?
Well, I came up with Martin Luther King and the Civil Rights Movement. And now we're trying to develop a civil rights movement. Young people in the system of free enterprise and capitalism need to understand money and how it works. It takes an army of volunteers, business leaders, educators, the entire community. We need the community's help.
If you need financial hope, we're here to help you. Call Operation Hope at 877-592-HOPE. That's 877-592-HOPE. Or visit us online at OperationHope.org.
Winston Smith is in a cell somewhere inside the Ministry of Love, and he is waiting to see what's going to happen to him after having been busted with Julia. Julia is nothing more at this point than a rapidly fading memory. As he's sitting in the holding area, the door opens and in comes a poet named Ampleforth. And that's where we'll pick it up. Ampleforth, he said. There was no yell from the telescreen. Ampleforth paused, mildly startled. His eyes focused themselves slowly on Winston. Ah, Smith, he said. You too. What are you in for? Well, to tell you the truth, he sat down awkwardly on the bench opposite Winston. There's only one offense, is there not? He said. And have you committed it? Apparently I have. He put a hand to his forehead and pressed his temples for a moment as though trying to remember something. These things happen, he began vaguely. I've been able to recall one instance, a possible instance. It was an indiscretion, undoubtedly. We were producing a definitive edition of the poems of Kipling, and I allowed the word God to remain at the end of a line. I couldn't help it, he added almost indignantly, raising his face to look at Winston. It was impossible to change the line. The rhyme was rod. Do you realize that there are only 12 rhymes to rod in the entire language? For days I had racked my brains. There was no other rhyme. The expression on his face changed. The annoyance passed out of it, and for a moment he looked almost pleased, a sort of intellectual warmth. The joy of the pedant who has found out some useless fact shone through the dirt and scrubby hair. Has it ever occurred to you, he said, that the whole history of English poetry has been determined by the fact that the English language lacks rhymes? No, that particular thought had never occurred to Winston, nor in the circumstances did it strike him as very important or interesting. Do you know what time of day it is, he said. Ampleforth looked startled again. I had hardly thought about it. They arrested me, could it be 2 days ago, perhaps three? His eyes flitted around the walls as though he half expected to find a window somewhere. There's no difference between night and day in this place. I don't see how one can calculate the time. They talked desultorily for some minutes. Then, without apparent reason, a yell from the telescreen bade them be silent. Winston sat quietly, his hands crossed. Ampleforth, too large to sit in comfort on the narrow bench, fidgeted from side to side, clasping his lank hands first around one knee, then around the other. The telescreen barked to him to keep still. Time passed, 20 minutes, an hour. It was difficult to judge. Once more there was a sound of boots outside. Winston's entrails contracted. Soon, very soon, perhaps in 5 minutes, perhaps now, the tramp of boots would mean that his own turn had come. The door opened. The cold-faced young officer stepped into the cell. With a brief movement of the hand, he indicated Ampleforth. Room 101, he said. Ampleforth marched clumsily out between the guards, his face vaguely perturbed but uncomprehending. What seemed like a long time passed. The pain in Winston's belly had revived. His mind sagged round and round on the same trick, like a ball falling again and again into the same series of slots. He had only 6 thoughts. The pain in his belly. A piece of bread. The blood and the screaming. O'Brien. Julia. The razor blade. There was another spasm in his entrails. The heavy boots were approaching. As the door opened, the wave of air that it created brought in a powerful smell of cold sweat. Parsons walked into the cell. He was wearing khaki shorts and a sport shirt. This time Winston was startled into self-forgetfulness. "You here," he said. Parsons gave Winston a glance in which there was neither interest nor surprise, but only misery. He began walking jerkily up and down, evidently unable to keep still. Each time he straightened his pudgy knees, it was apparent that they were trembling. His eyes had a wide-open, staring look, as though he could not prevent himself from gazing at something in the middle distance. "What are you in for?" said Winston. "Thought crime," said Parsons, almost blubbering. The tone of his voice implied at once a complete admission of his guilt and a sort of incredulous horror that such a word could be implied to himself. He paused opposite Winston and began eagerly appealing to him. You don't think they'll shoot me, do you, old chap? They don't shoot you if you haven't actually done anything, only thoughts, which you can't help. I know they give you a fair hearing. Oh, I trust them for that. They'll know my record, won't they? You know what kind of chap I was. Not a bad chap in any way. Not brainy, of course, but keen. I tried to do my best for the party, didn't I? I'll get off with 5 years, don't you think? Or even 10 years. A chap like me could make himself pretty useful in a labor camp. They wouldn't shoot me for going off the rails just once. Are you guilty? Said Winston. Of course I'm guilty, cried Parsons with a servile glance at the telescreen. You don't think the party would arrest an innocent man, do you? His frog-like face grew calmer and even took on a slightly sanctimonious expression. Thought crime is a dreadful thing, old man. It's insidious. It can get hold of you without you even knowing it. Do you know how it got hold of me? In my sleep. Yes, that's a fact. There I was, working away, trying to do my bit. Never knew I had any bad stuff in my mind at all, and then I started talking in my sleep. Do you know what they heard me saying? He sank his voice like someone who is obliged for medical reasons to utter an obscenity. Down with Big Brother. Yes, I said that. Said it over and over again, it seems. Between you and me, old man, I'm glad they got me before it went any further. Do you know what I'm going to say to them when I go before the tribunal? Thank you, I'm going to say. Thank you for saving me before it was too late. Who denounced you? Said Winston. It was my little daughter, said Parsons with sort of doleful pride. She listened at the keyhole. Heard what I was saying and nipped off to the patrols the very next day. Pretty smart for a nipper of 7, eh? I don't bear her any grudge for it. In fact, I'm proud of her. It shows I brought her up in the right spirit anyway. He made a few more jerky movements up and down several times, casting a longing glance at the lavatory pan. Then he suddenly ripped down his shorts. Excuse me, old man. I can't help it. It's the waiting. He plumped his large posterior into the lavatory pan. Winston covered his face with his hands. Smith! Yelled a voice from the telescreen. 6079, Smith! W, uncover your face! No faces covered in the cells! Winston uncovered his face. Parsons used the lavatory loudly and abundantly. It then turned out that the plug was defective and the cell stank abominably for hours afterwards. Parsons was removed. More prisoners came and went, mysteriously. One, a woman, was consigned to room 101, and Winston noticed, seemed to shrivel and turn a different color when she heard the words. A time came when, if it had been morning when he was brought here, it would be afternoon, or if it had been afternoon, that it would be midnight. There were 6 prisoners in the cell now, men and women, all sat very still. Opposite Winston, there sat a man with a chinless, toothy face, exactly like that of some large, harmless rodent. His fat, mottled cheeks were so pouched at the bottom that it was difficult not to believe that he had little stores of food tucked away there. His pale gray eyes flitted timorously from face to face and turned quickly away again when he caught anyone's eye. The door opened, and another prisoner was brought in, whose appearance sent a momentary chill through Winston. He was a commonplace, mean-looking man who might have been an engineer or technician of some kind. But what was startling was the emaciation of his face. It was like a skull. Because of its thinness, the mouth and eyes looked disproportionately large, and the eyes seemed filled with a murderous, unappeasable hatred of somebody or something. The man sat down on the bench, a little distance from Winston. Winston did not look at him again, but the tormented skull-like face was as vivid in his mind as though it had been straight in front of his eyes. Suddenly he realized what was the matter. The man was dying of starvation. The same thought seemed to occur almost simultaneously to everyone in the cell. There was a very faint stirring all the way around the bench. The eyes of the chinless man kept flitting towards the skull-faced man, then turning guiltily away, and then being dragged back by an irresistible attraction. Presently he began to fidget on his seat. At last he stood up, waddled clumsily across the cell, dug down into the pocket of his overalls, and with an abashed air held out a grimy piece of bread to the skull-faced man. There was a furious, deafening roar from the telescreen. The chinless man jumped in his tracks. The skull-faced man had quickly thrust his hands behind his back, as though demonstrating to all the world that he refused the gift. Bumstead! Roared the voice. 2713, Bumstead J! Let that piece of bread fall! The chinless man dropped the piece of bread on the floor. Remain standing where you are! Face the door! Make no movement! The chinless man obeyed. His large, pouchy eyes were quivering uncontrollably. The door clanged open. As the young officer entered and stepped aside, there emerged from behind him a short, stumpy guard with enormous arms and shoulders. He took his stand opposite the chinless man and then, at a signal from the officer, let free a frightful blow with all the weight of his body behind it, full in the chinless man's mouth. The force of it seemed almost to knock him clear off the floor. His body was flung across the cell and fetched up against the base of the lavatory seat. For a moment, he lay as though stunned, with dark blood oozing from his mouth and nose. A very faint whimpering or squeaking, which seemed unconscious, came out of him. Then he rolled over and raised himself unsteadily on hands and knees. Amid a stream of blood and saliva, the two halves of a dental plate fell out of his mouth.
And each time I was someone else, and everyone was taken in. Powers chatter in high places, stir up eddies in the dust of rage. Set me to facing the cage.
The Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
Every generation has a story to tell. For those who lived through the war in Iraq, it's The Last True Story I'll Ever Tell by John Crawford. The New York Times best-selling account of a man who opposed the war but fought on the front lines. The Last True Story I'll Ever Tell is the first on-the-ground memoir to make an impact, raves the Times Book Review. John Stewart of The Daily Show says it's a wonderful read. Time Magazine calls it harrowing and exquisite. Read The Last True Story I'll Ever Tell, now a Riverhead paperback.
The lies, incompetence, greed, and pure stupidity of the Bush crime family are all revealed in the game Impeached. Hi, Truth Seekers, this is Mike Malloy, and if you despise this crime family like I do, you need to visit ImpeachBushGame.com and buy the only board game that's bold enough to tell it like it is. Go to ImpeachBushGame.com, buy your game, and check out the Bush, Satan Rove, and Deadeye Dick voodoo dolls. I've got my game, and I'm sticking pins in my Bush voodoo doll right now! So visit ImpeachBushGame.com and join in on the fun today.
feeling left out by right-wing talk radio? You found a home with Mike Malloy.
Amazing grace, thought it passed you by. Wake up every day.
It's about 10 before the hour. Our program is engineered tonight in New York by Justin Yuen and our resident rock star, Jason Isaac, along with Vicki Hibble. Dee Neal is our associate producer. She handles the phone calls. Chris in Minnesota is our senior correspondent. Mark Marshall is our webmaster. Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org, archives the program. And Jim in Arkansas is our music bureau chief. Catherine Bay is the executive producer of this program. Parvis is calling from Larchmont, New York. Parvis, welcome to the program. Thanks for your patience.
Hi, Mike.
Hey, how are you doing?
Nice hearing you. It's really a pleasure listening to you. It really keeps me sane.
Ah.
Now, what I should say is that Iran does not pose any threat to anybody. You know, it has not initiated a war for 250 years. Its spiritual leader, Ayatollah Khamenei, recently said a nuclear bomb is Islamically immoral. That's what it said.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you see, during the war with Iraq, Saddam Hussein used mustard gas against Iranians. Iranians did have the gas, but did not use it against Iraqis because at that time, Ayatollah Khomeini said, no, you're not going to use gas. Now, you see, I mean, they're trying to demonize Iran. Now, I like secular government, but that happens by peace, not by war. And these guys are insane. If they attack Iran, Iranians have a lot of options. One of them would be to close off the Strait of Hormuz, which connects the Persian Gulf, the Arabian Sea, and all the oil from the Middle East, from Saudi Arabia, from Iraq, from Kuwait, from Iran, should pass through that strait. And they can, you know, just sink their own tankers. You know, this is an end game. For them, this is an end game. If USA wants to attack them, wants to dominate them, they say USA has no right to dominate us. We are very free, you know, spirited people, and we don't like to be dominated by anybody. So these morons, they think it's a cakewalk. They think it's just like Iraq. They're going to throw flowers at us, or Iranians, you know, will welcome us, or we'll change the government. They're smoking hash or something. Their brains are out of shape.
Well, you know, part of the problem is the United States already overthrew the government of Iran once back in 1953, and we put this murderous Shah in and then established Savak. And then the Shah had to develop cancer and go out of the country, damn, and the Ayatollah Khomeini from France led the revolution, and all of a sudden you have a revolutionary government in Iran, and oh my God, it's people who want to do it their way, and this really pissed off the United States. So that's one of the reasons Iran is in the crosshairs, that and the fact that there is not just oil and natural gas in Iran, but also uranium.
Yes. And also, you know, that's the only country over there is not under the influence of USA, and USA wants to control the whole world. If you read the book, I'm sure you have read it, by John Perkins, Confessions of an Economic Hitman, he says that we have to warn American citizens, as patriotic Americans, about self-destructive behavior of USA, because what we're doing, we're destroying other countries, other cultures, and ecosystem. For instance, in Ecuador, we went over there, the oil companies went over there, and sent these phony Christian people who told called themselves the Summer Institute of Linguistics. And they said, we're going to study the language of the native people over there, the Indians. But where's the front? They were front people for oil companies. So wherever there was oil, they take the Indians. We're taking you to this place. We'll give you food, water, and medicine, everything, and spend pennies on them while they have to give them hundreds of millions of dollars. These are the crooks, you know, these oil companies. And they destroyed the ecosystem. They destroyed the water. They destroyed the fish. They destroyed everything. This happened in Ecuador.
Yeah, well, Ecuador was destroyed by Texaco. And the Ecuadorian people have tried on several instances now to file lawsuits in the United States against Texaco. And Texaco, the indigenous people try to file these lawsuits. And Texaco just laughs and laughs and laughs. Parvis, let me leave it there.
Thank you very much.
All right, thanks for checking in. I do appreciate it. I want to try to get one more call in here, who is a man who's also been holding on forever. Herb is calling from Mississippi. Hey, Herb, got about a minute, pal.
Okay, hey, Mike. I just wanted to say something real fast. Being a two-service veteran, I wanted to kind of defend the generals just a little bit, not a whole lot. But David Hackworth, Lieutenant Colonel, was one to speak up, and he went through so much that, you know, he was court-martialed. They busted him, and he had to leave the country.
Yeah, he had to move to Australia.
Yeah, and he had it so rough during the time. I'm sure this weighs on their mind because those people that did that to him wasn't as bad as this group we have now.
Yeah, and all Hackworth did, Hackworth was a warrior. He didn't have any problem with going to war as long as it was done right.
And his
beef was with people like Westmoreland, who in Hackworth's mind so screwed up what was going on in Southeast Asia, and should be mentioned.
He's also the one that found the 8.8 million missing, and boy, when he found that, they smeared him too.
That's true. That's very true.
Well, Mike, I'm going to let you go. Thank you, partner.
All right. I appreciate it, Herb. Take care. Yeah, Colonel David Hackworth, who just recently passed away. The most decorated veteran, if you're interested, in the Vietnam War. Thanks for joining in the madness here tonight. I do appreciate it. I'll see you tomorrow night, okay? Take care. Watch your back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Air America Radio.
America Radio.
Do you know the power of financial empowerment? Ambassador Andrew Young, humanitarian and educator, has teamed with Operation Hope founder John Bryant to help eradicate poverty through financial literacy education. Mr. Bryant, how is Operation Hope meeting this challenge?
To empower 5 million youth in 5 years in financial literacy.
Ambassador Young, what's your role in financial literacy education?
Well, I came up with Martin Luther King in the Civil Rights Movement, and now we're trying to develop a Silver Rights Movement. Young people in the system of free enterprise and capitalism need to understand money and how it works. It takes an army of volunteers, business leaders, educators, the entire community. We need the community's help.
If you need financial hope, we're here to help you. Call Operation Hope at 877-592-HOPE. That's 877-592-HOPE. Or visit us online at operationhope.org.